Christian Conspiracy Coalition.
Without faith, without belief in something, what are we?
You know, the hardest thing is to listen. To hear his voice. God's voice.
It's a leap of faith.
I would rather stand with God and be judged by the world than stand with the world and be judged by God.
Welcome back for another episode of Christian Conspiracy Coalition, a place where the best minds in the conspiracy realm gather to share and discuss their faith, Christianity, and the spiritual war thrust upon humanity. Today, we welcome returning guests, familiar faces, and new members to the coalition. It's always great to meet new people, have new conversations, and share the good word. Of this, I'm reminded of Hebrews 10:24-25, which states, "Let us consider how to stir up one another to love and good works, not neglecting to meet together, as it is a habit for some, but encouraging one another, and all the more as you see the day drawing near." And on that note, let us welcome today's panel. First up, we have Heidi Love of the Unfiltered Rise podcast. Welcome, Heidi.
Hi, everyone. I'm Heidi Love. I'm happy to be here. I'm Unfiltered Rise podcast, everywhere podcasts are served.
Thank you. Next up, we have Julia from the Cosmic Peach podcast. Welcome back, Julia. It's been a while. It's good to see you back.
Thank you. Yes, I'm thrilled to be here. I'm glad that there's two other ladies joining us. I think that's going to be fun.
We've got perfect parity at the moment. We've got three ladies and three gentlemen. This is great. Ooh, up next, yeah. Brand new member, John Kerwin of Wake Up or Else and author of The Conspiracy Theorist Survival Guide. Welcome, John.
Hey, Drew. Great to be with you guys. Looking forward to a great conversation.
Next up, Deplorable Janet of Deplorable Nation podcast. Welcome, Janet. How are you going?
Hello, hello, and thank you very much for inviting me to this because it's going to be a fantastic conversation. Looking forward to it.
It sure will. I know it is. This is a very interesting topic, and it's great that we've got that balance of males and females on the panel. Final, but not least, Brandon Kroll of the Manor Daily podcast. Welcome, Brandon.
Hey, thanks for having me back on, Drew.
All right, people. Got a bit of a doozy today, and I'm a bit concerned because we know that Julia and Heidi can be a little bit naughty when it comes to things. The topics for our conversation today, first up, original sin. What does it mean for humanity in our modern age? Two, lust and sexualization of mankind. And third, to finish the show off, pornography, the subversion of man's animalistic base desires and more. So here we are. We're going to get started with some original sin. The premise of original sin holds that humans, through the fact of birth, inherit a tainted nature with a proclivity to sinful conduct due to the consequences of Adam and Eve's fall. What does this mean for a modern world and humanity in general? I would like to think that even the common man who has no faith tries their best to live their life, adhering to a moral compass, values, and code of conduct within their communities. Is this enough? How does modern man manage to traverse a world engulfed in hedonism, selfishness, and immoral practices? Psalms 51:5 says, "Behold, I was shaped in iniquity, and sin did my mother conceive me." So this is a base thing that all humans have a proclivity for, sin. All because of the original sin. The original sin that Adam and Eve birthed upon all of us as humanity. So who would like to start? Who would like to tackle this one?
I'll jump in. I volunteer as tribute. Never mind. go ahead.
Go for it, John.
Sure. So, of course, this is a very, you could have 10 episodes on original sin. I think that what it means to us in modern society is it's sort of like getting dropped into a war zone with zero weapons. And then your objective is to find the where the helicopter is going to land. That's Jesus. And he's going to catch you out of there. That's your only hope, is to get caught up out of the flesh into the spirit, and then you walk through the war zone in the spirit. Because otherwise, you know, you're basically fighting a spiritual battle with natural tools, and it's not going to work.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. It's this idea of that, you know, we are in a physical realm, we are physical beings, but a lot of people who aren't of the faith or don't have a belief system at all don't recognize the spiritual impact that exists within our material world and how that is the battlefield that we're trying to fight against. And like you said, John, so well, if we don't have the right tools to fight it, it's like using a potato gun against a tank. It's not going to work.
Exactly.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, there's no way around it, too, because it's such a double-edged sword. That's why we need Jesus, because we're imperfect humans. And no matter how we try to be perfect and great and good and never sin and, you know, pray before we eat and do all these things, we're still going to sin because that's our fallen nature, as they say, or the original sin made it to where we have to have Jesus, because we cannot forgive ourselves. You know, we'll never be the ultimate sacrifice. There is no greater sacrifice than what Jesus did. So we have to have him, because we sin every single day, no matter how hard we try not to.
You mean I can't just give myself a pass every weekend? I'm fine. I'm good. I'm good this weekend.
They used to sell them in the Catholic Church long ago, but I don't think
sure they still do. How many mafiosos went on their deathbed and just bought their way into heaven thanks to the Catholic Church at times?
You know. And I conjecture that it isn't actual sexual sin that was the original sin. As much as I read into this, it was doubt and pride, right? It was doubt originally, right, and pride that followed for Adam, because really the doubt was Eve's, but the pride was his. And so as much as I read through it and intergenerational, they always link it back to Adam in the scriptures, but Augustine links it back to Eve. So I think it's the grand conspiracy theory in itself, right?
Humanity cannot exist without Adam or Eve. So it's a duality of both their sins that contributed to what we have as original sin today.
Absolutely. And without it, we would not exist. However, it's what actually feeds in the doubt and the pride all go together with the actual sin, making more sin, because then you have all these other guilt, shame, blah, 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 blah. It's what keeps us down, right? That's how, what, who uses that? That's not Jesus. Jesus isn't using that, you know? Yeah.
Well, somebody else. I think too that us being of a prideful nature causes us to actually sin more, because we always think we know better. And most of the times, and this came from a friend of mine who said it perfectly, instead of leading through the soul, we lead through our ego. And so because of our pride, we won't let our ego go to let somebody else be in control.
It's a weird dichotomy, the idea of pride, because a lot of people value pride in themselves for their hard efforts and things they've achieved in life. But I think it's a balancing act as to where does pride become the sin of pride. A quick example would be, how many times do you anecdotally hear about a husband or a wife who starts going to the gym, gets really fit, starts to take care of themselves and their health, and then they take too much pride in their appearance, and that allows them to almost stray from their marriage. And then we have things like cheating on spouses, and these types of things occur because they have a pride in their own appearance, and somehow they justify that as they can go off and they can get the woman they always wanted, and they turn their back on their life that they had before.
Or money.
Mm.
Money will do it every time in a relationship. Like, I make more than you, therefore you're subservient to me. Whether it's the man or the woman, whoever makes more money in the household, they always feel like, well, you know, you don't have to work because I make so much money, so you better do X, Y, Z, all these things I want you to do. But yeah, I mean, humans are wonderful, horrible, miraculous, and misguided. That's why we need Jesus.
We do need Jesus.
Well, something that's interesting with the apple, or why we affiliate it with that fruit, is that Pythagoras basically said it's the five points of man, the three of the pentagram that equal male, and then the two equals female, conjoined together. And when you cut an apple at its equator, it equals 5 points. So that's why Nimrod's wife chose the pentagram as her sigil, or the sigil of Astaroth. And I think that's interesting, because a lot of people automatically affiliate Baphomet with Satan, and that's wrong. That would connect more so to the Trihermes, with the whole phrase of as above, so below. And what, where do we see on his forehead? Right there in the center, pineal gland ascending. And if you're familiar with some translating into Hebrew, 666 is the number of the beast. 616 is the number of a follower of the beast. And one can equal I or A. And again, pineal gland ascending, it's the God number. When you multiply 33 times 2 for Masonic, it equals 66. What's missing? The I in the middle. When you do that for the skull and bones, the skull or the bones crossed equals times. So 3 times 22, 66. What's missing? The I. And that's all, ultimately what it comes down to is the pride of man and materialism. And that's going to be the great illusion over the hearts and minds of men. Solve was bringing the Antichrist into existence. And whereas Coagula on Baphomet's tattoo is blood clot. So the third phase is already incoming. And a lot of people don't seem to realize the pride of life is very much seen in our everyday culture. People becoming lovers of themselves and materialism rather than lovers of God.
I would almost equate it to, and I don't want to diminish pride as a sin by any means, but it seems like a low-level entry sin, like that incrementalism, because there's plenty of non-Christians out there, lovely people I know who wouldn't harm a fly. They love people. They help their community. They do all these, what you would see as a strong moral compass enacted in their everyday life. But it's those entry-level sins of pride, like you said, keeping up with the Joneses of having the brand new car that everyone else has, the idea of consumerism as being this enabler of pride that can be the gateway to more nefarious, evil ways in which sin can take hold of mankind. And I really do feel sorry for the people who don't have a faith in it, because from their perspective, they're doing all the right things. They're taking care of their families. They love their loved ones. They're helping their community. They're living as best as they see fit. But there's still, as John put it, there's elements of this spiritual war. Well, whatever reason, they can't see. They don't have their night vision goggles on to see the Viet Cong coming over the hill at night. They don't see that hidden side of things.
Mm-hmm. Well, and the
and it's
one
like all the physical things in the world. Sorry, go ahead, Heidi.
Oh, I was just going to say the one sin that will accompany the good churchgoers that Drew mentions is, other than pride, is usually lust. I'm just saying, I don't know how many times you see like the pastor's wife did what with who or whatever, whatever. And none of us are perfect. Mm-hmm. I'm not saying that. But like it sneaks in the back door, you know. So
yeah, that's kind of like what I was going to say. It's like all the physical things of the world are the attack on the spiritual world, because lust, money, pride, like your physical appearance, all these things that tie you to the physical world attack you in the spiritual world. Because if there was no money and you had to just like somebody because you loved them and they were a good person, or if you weren't looking at their physical body, you know, people may not even be in the marriages that they're in if there wasn't a physical component to it, or a money or a lustful component to it. So, or even a prideful component to it. So it's how do you train your mind to not care about this physical world so much that you would give it all up for your spiritual health, I guess. That's like a huge problem with everybody.
I think that taps into the rich man aspect as well. Is like, I've already been doing all this stuff since my youth. What more must I do to be a perfect follower? Is like, can you get rid of your materialism? And he couldn't. And I think that's where a lot of people in the modern church, they're like Lot's wife. They have to look one more time at Sodom and Gomorrah, like, oh, think what I'd be missing, instead of just focusing straight ahead.
She didn't want to be the last person not to see the end trailer on a Marvel movie, Brandon. Come on. It's like everyone has to see that last little clip.
I always stay.
You have to see the credits.
Yes. Right.
Well, I've always looked at the original sin issue as sort of a raw deal. Like, I'm born into this fallen world, separated from God because these two people back here had to engage in all this activity. And so it's taken me a lifetime for God to bring me to the place where he finally spoke to me and he said, do you have any other questions before you'd be ready to follow me? And it was at that point that I was able to surrender this whole pursuit for knowledge to know God, because I believe at this point in my life, you can know God, but you can't understand him. The gospel is a power gospel. This is the key that Paul said is the kingdom of heaven is not in word, but it's in power. And you cannot use reason to understand signs and wonders and miracles. You have to abandon reason. And this whole realm has so many questions. Like, if God knows everything, he knew when he created Adam and Eve, they were going to do this thing. And he created them anyway. And plunged, you know, untold millions, maybe billions of people to go to eternity without him. And he did it anyway. Okay, I'm going to put that in the I have no possible answer for that one box. And I'm going to decide, my prayer every day is, God, I accept your terms. Mm-hmm. And that's brought me a lot of peace.
Well, you know, and the thing that I think is beautiful about us being born into sin is the fact that, yes, he knew that we were going to sin in the first place, but that also gives him the opportunity for us to go through sanctification, to get right, to do right, because nobody's going to be sanctified right off the bat, right? And like somebody that's cussed their whole entire life, you can't expect them to like stop cussing altogether like right this second. No, sometimes it's a process, and it takes a while to, you know, to do these things. And that's why I think with being born into sin, he knew we were going to do it, but it's his opportunity to work on us and to bring us to where we need to be through him.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Well, and it's a beautiful creation, like, right? Like, you know that your kids are going to do some messed up crap. Like, my kids have really hurt me. Mm-hmm. And right. I wouldn't take them back. Like, and even the one that's hurt me the most, you know, like, whatever.
At the same time, it's not a free rein to go, hey, we live in a realm where we're predisposed to sin, so it's okay to sin. It's a case of recognizing your sin. We know as human beings, it's going to happen. Everyone sins. Every single human being, it's going to happen in some way, some fashion. It's recognizing your own sin and then doing something about it. That's the biggest thing.
Or asking God to reveal your sin to you, because some people don't know. They don't know what it is they did wrong.
Especially
or they don't know where to go next. Mm-hmm, exactly.
So I want to come back to what John just said about the idea of it not being fair. And I recognize this as a teacher, because we see children, as humans, we have this innate curiosity to try and understand and conceptualize the world around us. And children are very, very adamant about what is fair and what is unfair. And this type of equation of, we're in a world where we're going to sin, and it wasn't our choice, it was sins of the Father, essentially, through Adam. Why are we being held accountable for someone else's actions? And kids do that as well. A kid who's a part of a group that does something naughty or bad often gets tarred with the same brush and feathers. So they don't understand that. And I think as adults, through faith, that is a big revelation to try and come to, because I myself, I'm very logically minded. I'm driven by reason as well. And this is one of the hardest things for me to conceptualize, is why would we be held accountable for sins of our ancestors, the first ancestors of mankind? And I think that's something that people looking from the outside in at churches and religion and faith in general, that's one of the big things that they find as a bit of a bugbear with Christianity, that why would you follow a faith when you're already demonized from the start? And that's a really good talking point for people, that you don't have to understand God's creations, his meanings, his intentions, because how could we possibly do that as physical beings with this ethereal creator of everything? We can't possibly pretend to understand his thinking behind anything. We can have theories, we can postulate ideas, but at the end of the day, all we're going to do is keep going around in circles trying to understand intelligence that is greater than ourselves.
Yeah.
I've never really looked at it like that. Maybe I'm just naive, but I feel like even if it wasn't for Adam and Eve, we would still have problems, because we're humans and humans live to make problems for themselves and others. Like, I feel like even if it wasn't Adam and Eve who did it, it would have been somebody, and we'd still be paying for it, because people be peopling. And I feel like a lot of the times when people come to Christianity and they find God and they're reborn, their story is so beautiful and it helps so many people in their struggle. There's like beauty in their struggle in finding Christ. And so I don't know if I would change anything about it. I feel like all the internal struggles and battles that people go through in their lives make them that the people that they are. And it's so crazy how much impact one person can have on like many, many, many people. And so if it was just made so easy for us from the very beginning, would it even hit the same? Like, would it even be as meaningful if we were just given a free pass from the very start and we had nothing to humble us, nothing to learn from, no mistakes made that we had to repent for? Like, what would the development of humanity be if we were just perfect all the time? I don't know. It would be, it's like a weird, like Illuminati utopia society, right? Where nobody does anything wrong. And I kind of like it how it is now. I think people are so unique and their stories are so beautiful. And we've all done something that's made us be like, wow, if that never happened, I wouldn't be this person that I am today that I really like.
Is it a case of there's two battlefields going on in this spiritual war? It's not just the world we're born into. That's the battlefield itself, the no man's land. But the trenches are what happens within our own body, our own soul, the temple. We've got two distinct battlefields. We've got the things we interact with, and then ourselves is the most important one because we're in the trenches of our own body, our own soul, fighting tooth and nail against all these things being slung at us from multiple directions. It's bigger than anyone can really understand. And the biggest part is the innate inner part of yourself, your fight in this, not just your interactions with the things outside.
Mm-hmm.
If I may, just talking with Gary, I have a theory that if God is all knowing and he has a council in heaven, let's say the angels, and he knows there's going to be a little bit of a coup, if you will, he decides to go 6 days creation. Okay, there we go. And he knows that there's going to be, hey, maybe I could use this in part of my coup with Satan going down to manipulating Eve in the Garden of Eden. So all this goes down. Now we get to the prodigal son narrative. And look at that from a spiritual perspective, because we get Genesis 6:4 that the sons of God came down, had affairs with daughters of men, Nephilim and all that. So we get this whole spiritual battle. He gets the Israelites to wipe out the inhabitants of Canaan for all their intermingling with these demonic beings. And then eventually we get to the New Testament. Behold, what manner of the love of the Father that we, Christians, should be called the sons of God. In Psalm 82, we sit in judgment over them. So it kind of makes me wonder, is that why he created man? I'm going to create something else because I need to replace a council that's rebellious to me. I want them to prove that they're loyal to me in this earth. I need to have a testing ground to see if they loved me. If they chose the Father's Son via communion, the whole marriage ceremony aspect that I've referred to before, I want to know if they're going to choose that gift as opposed to these other ones that say they can ascend like the God Most High, or they all fall in line of Lucifer's classic line. So I kind of wonder if that's almost the reason why he created man, but it's also it's a per individual case.
I'd like to amen that to the max, because Job chapter 1 gives us the insight of what you just shared, Brandon, that God is up in the throne, and here comes the sons of God and Satan also, and God initiates a convo with Satan, and he brings up Job, not Satan. So apparently, I don't want to say God had a chip on his shoulder, but he had this, I call it an intergalactic debate going on, apparently. I mean, that's the only conclusion you could draw. And he starts bragging on Job, and he's like, have you seen my servant Job? He's the bomb, right? And then Satan is like, no, he just serves you because you bless him. And God violated his own principles to prove a point that man will serve him even if everything isn't lined up.
Yes.
And so I think that passage is probably one of the most important passages in the entire Bible because it explains all of the mess we're in. Like you just said, it's a test. And we're being proven. Are we going to worship him because we've met him in the prayer closet? We have a personal relationship with him. We know he's not Moloch. So it doesn't matter what goes on around me. I know he's good, and I will not let go of that.
Amen.
Amen. Yeah. Wow. Brandon brought up the sizzler. That's good. Totally. We choose to love God. Yeah. Despite how messed up we are and how messed up our lives are. Like, well, the angels, they were like, we love God, but like, I could probably do it better. Yeah. And so then God created us, and we love him despite our human nature.
Yeah, I've been watching him for 6 days now. I'm pretty sure I know what he does, so I can just copy that. It's fine.
Yes.
Right. Yeah. Well, honestly, with the whole God consciousness movement, it's about the I. You know, I can do it myself. I don't really need him, or I can just have him indwell me. But again, it's all warped to the ninth degree. But that's kind of what the movement is, and that's the movement of demons, is that you can do it yourself. It goes right back to the Garden of Eden. So when people are telling me, it's like, how do you know God exists? Because the same lie is still going on. It hasn't changed.
That's Mormonism in a nutshell, too. Like, you got to earn your way. You got to do it yourself. You got to make that change. There's no grace just given. Like, you've got to make enough money. And if you're 10 cents short, that's when God will chip in. And that's literally how they put it. And I'm like, that's not how it works, you guys. Yes. Like, but yes, you know, that's a good person. But
that's kind of like the basis of the new age stuff that's coming in nowadays. And it's like based on prosperity and wealth doctrines and, you know, all these things that when you look at it, it's like an abandonment of God. And it's all about like you and your ego and yourself and what can you do for yourself, you know, when we should be as human beings focusing on how can we serve God and how can we serve other people?
Well, I love that idea.
Go ahead, Drew.
Sorry, Heidi. I was going to say, I just love that idea that you've put forward, Brandon, because it makes sense for humanity to try and unpack that more. So I'm thinking of, that's a great way to flush out dissenters that you know are going to appear. You've got this council. Traditionally, our human understanding is a council is there to advise, help you, support you on something. That something being mankind. That council's there to help support mankind. If your council starts acting in ways that aren't in the best interests of mankind in your creation, it's pretty easy to acknowledge and notify and point out who the bad elements are, who the bad apples in the cart are. So that perfectly put forward, my friend. Perfect.
Well, and then again, it's just the
it does make the prodigals.
Oh, sorry, Brendan. Oh, I was going to say that does make the prodigal son aspect. Yeah, it makes the fulfillment of Crowley. Like, I am my own star. I am, I am. And you are in me, and I am in you, and his whole dumb speech that even Hitler gave, and it's all the same. It's yucky. I don't like it.
Yeah, it's yucky. That's a good way to put it.
Of Hollywood. That's where everybody gravitates toward. Oh, if I could become my own star, celebrity, Hollywood Walk of Fame. It's like, guys, that means they just reached a higher tier. And we're over here going, good for them. They really deserved it. And we're just like, yeah.
Well, and I want to say, too, this has come up actually in Congress before, where a certain female political leader that's very old said that we all have a spark of divinity in us. No, we were made from God, but we are not gods at all by any means. And any time you compare that, we will fall short because we are so focused on living through our fleshly desires instead of spiritual desires.
Is this where we see the modern day nomenclature, which is a misinterpretation, God helps those who help themselves? That almost becomes the springboard for people going through that era of pride, and the self, the ego gets driven through that because they almost justify, if God wants to help me, I can take it upon myself to do all the things that God is intended for me. They self-justify their actions that way.
It's the only thing that's socially acceptable. You can climb a ladder all day long and still look amazing at church on Sunday with your brand new Lexus and your brand new Jimmy Choo's. You will still get that adoration. That is the truth. And you should have spent that $2,000 you blew on those shoes on helping some people eat, because that's ridiculous. I'm sorry. No, I like having nice things, but that's ridiculous. That's too far. Like, you can help people and everybody wants to be their own God. But like Janet said, we're supposed to serve others. How are we ever serving others if we're all so self-focused? Like, I'm not saying don't ever buy yourself something nice. I'm not saying any of that. I'm just saying when it gets to that level, when you need a pair of shoes that were probably made at the same place, the same factory, the same everything as the Payless shoe store, and they just painted the bottom, like, what level have we gone to?
Well, that's the thing, though, Heidi, is we're programmed, though. We're programmed to want those things. And I actually, I've been kind of on this weird thing with my husband lately, because I feel like when you wear brands, you're branding yourself, like you're yoking to them, like you're giving. So you wear like the Nike and like all you brand yourself with it. And even buying like Jimmy Choo, like you said, I spent X amount of money that I worked my life hours. I gave part of my life hours for this dollar amount to give to you for this bloody shoe. Like this, that's crazy to me. Like I'm cool to like shop at the thrift store or whatever. I'll let somebody else buy it new with the full 20 and I'll pay 10 for it after you've already got all the demons out of it. You know what I'm saying?
And like, you don't have things you like, or if they're good quality, some things are better quality. Like I get it. But like when you $70 pair of Nikes is not the same as a $2,000 pair of pumps. Like we've got to get to some level here where things are not crazy, you know.
I feel you. I'm weird about brands.
I get what you're saying though, because it's brand. All demonic. If you look up every single one of them, they're all the symbolism. Brandon could do a whole show on it. It's crazy bananas. I see it everywhere. It
makes your brain
knock ass. Knock ass.
Just shave our heads and join a monastery. It's all over. Yeah.
It's, I mean, because you see it everywhere. Once you know, it makes you kind of nuts. But like at the end of the day, also we can't escape it, because like you said, we'd have to shave our heads and wear a sheet. Like, well, literally.
Right. I'm not saying wear a trash bag, but I'm just saying. Be aware. That's all.
Right.
Well, definitely isn't the place to start spruiking the merch store in this episode, is it? I'll just leave that one behind. No.
I mean, depends. Is it $2,000 or no?
No, I think it's 25. 25, everybody. Cosmic.
You're okay. You're okay. 25 is okay.
And you ladies make a good point. And here's something that I think about that for the people out there, male or female, who are dead set on you can only wear Jimmy Choo's, you can only carry a Prada purse, or the guys, you know, with their sneakers and stuff. To me, it's a form of idolatry, because you constantly seek out that and put that above God. And that's a problem. That's a problem for a lot of people.
But we also see that in podcasting, don't we, idol. Janet? We have people have followers. They always call them followers. It's almost some kind of religious connotation. I like to use listeners, because you're listening to my show. I hate the term followers. It seems somewhat idolatry to that.
I like to say friends, because I am in contact with people that actually listen to the show. And Heidi and I have talked about this before, but it can be very cultish in the podcast world, and there are idols that people look up to, just like they idolize, you know, movie stars or sports people or whatever. Mm. There's the same kind of thing in the podcast community.
So people
have to be careful.
So as soon as I start seeing people walking around with glasses and fake red beards, that's when I should give up the show.
I don't know. It depends. Ask him if they're being Chris from Operation Red Pill or you.
I'd like to say something regarding the consumerism as a believer in 2024. I remember reading Fox's Book of the Martyrs, and this one guy, he was a believer. He's going to be burned at the stake. And he goes up there and he's like, there's so much wood here. You could give half of this wood away and still burn it just great.
There you go.
I think it depends on where you are in the station in life. Like, God may call you to run for public office, let's say. And the clothes that you're going to have to buy for that journey is going to be different than the guy that's called to the hills of Mexico as a missionary. So you can't really cookie cutter the whole, you know, should I have a nice suit or whatever thing, but it does definitely teach modesty in the Bible. So Kenneth Copeland has a personal net worth of $750 million. That's not his ministry's value. That's his personal net worth. So that's bad juju. That's
well,
all
we can see it. You see his eyeballs?
Like a demon.
Yeah, I was going
to
say.
He looks
demonic.
Like a
snake.
Yeah,
he looks like a snake. And he does like weird stuff, like talk about like, oh, you know, me and Jesus, and I had a dream, and I was in heaven, and we were dunking each other in the fountains. And I'm like, what is this? Like, this is stupid. This is crazy. Yeah.
American crazy Christianity is at a whole different level to the rest of the world.
Yeah.
It's so wild.
He's got crazy.
But I keep telling him, and that's sometimes why I do post, is because I'm not trying to get followers. I'm trying to make sure, like, for instance, today's was gearing on the patriotism aspect. And everyone even trying to give me a satire perspective comeback. I'm like, you're basically telling me you love your patriotism more than Christ. I says, I'm going to always advocate Christ over whatever politics there are. I'm not going left. I'm not going lesser two evils. I'm not emphasizing one candidate over the other. What I'm asking you, if this country is destined to fall, or the whole world in general, where is your faith at the end of the day? Are you more loyal to your flag, your ribbons, and banners, or are you actually saying, I'm okay with it falling because I know where my eternity is at? And that's what it comes down to, folks. It's like, it's not about the followers. It's, are you getting the message? Because I'm not pointing at me. I'm pointing at him. And if you're not getting that, then you're following for the wrong reasons. And that's honestly sometimes why I do those posts when I get a lot of followers, because I want to make sure. Where's your heart at?
Mm-hmm.
If you don't get hate mail, you're not doing it right.
Exactly. Oh,
yeah. Well, Drew and me are doing good because we're in trouble all the time.
We are in trouble all the time.
Oh, my gosh.
Naughty corner.
Oh, I actually think John's been in the naughty corner quite a lot, too. Didn't you get shadow banned a ton, too? Oh, yeah.
Oh, me?
Yeah. You
oh,
were
yeah.
telling me.
Yeah,
oh, yeah.
I've been actually pretty fortunate with YouTube. I haven't gotten a strike or anything in 7 years because I've kind of stuck on one topic the whole time. So they apparently are letting me slide for now, but I don't know. My days are numbered.
Yeah, they probably
don't talk
are.
To me, Drew.
People get a contact shadow ban just by liking my posts. That's the really weird part of
that. Is that what happened?
Hey, that's why I took my YouTube channel down. I was like, I'm so over this. I'm good.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah, I knew. I set up a podcast, the Conspiracy Theorist Survival Guide podcast, and then I plan to move over to Rumble starting next week, actually. We're going to start doing stuff over there because it's just inevitable. Their community guidelines now say you can't pray for the sick because that's medical misinformation.
Okay.
Gee, not at all an attack on Christianity. Not at all.
Yeah. Right.
Does anyone else have anything else to add to original sin before we move on to our next topic at all? Any last bits you've been wanting to get out during this conversation? No? Okay. Let's move on to lust, sexualization of mankind. In Corinthians 6:18-20 states, flee from sexual morality. Every other sin a person commits is outside the body, but the sexually immoral person sins against their own body. Or do you not know that your body is a temple of the Holy Spirit within you, whom you have from God? You are not your own, for you were bought with a price. So glorify God in your body. Our modern world is surrounded by sexual immorality, sexual innuendo, and advertising. After all, the modern day saying is, sex sells. We are bombarded with historical truths and modern day propaganda, ranging from the world's oldest profession to self-love. Is there any wonder that modern man is lost amongst the propaganda war being thrown at us from every aspect of society? Far more often than not, the outsiders believe a Christian, their belief in relation to sex is generally that it's a sin. Yet it is God's own words from Genesis 1:28 that say, "And God blessed them, and God said unto them, Be fruitful and multiply, and replenish the earth and subdue it, and have dominion over the fish of the sea, and over the fowl of the air, and over every living thing that moveth upon the earth." So sex isn't this immoral, horrible practice. It's the manner in which it's been corrupted and used in the modern day. So who would like to start on this one?
I just want to say, as an opener, you said the sex sells thing, and it immediately made me think of something. There's an attack on the family. There's an attack on women's fertility. It's harder and harder for women to get and stay pregnant, but sex is like at an all-time high of like just the act of sex, like have sex with everyone you can as often as you can and show your bits and pieces on every platform you can. But you can't have a family. You shouldn't get married. And what, like, who wants to have kids anymore? Like, it's so perverted that sex, 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 no family, no fertility, like all this stuff is going on, and there's poison in everything we eat, and there's poison in all this stuff women put all over their bodies. And so it's just interesting to me how we've gotten here where it's like it's all about sex, but not about kids, not about love, not about family. And it's the actual inverse of that scripture you just read.
What
And
about
I want
the
to
sorry, go
go
for
ahead.
it. Oh, I was
Go
just going to
ahead.
quickly say that the message a lot of young men seem to get is why buy the cow when you can get the milk for free?
That's what I was just going to say, that along with what Julia said and what you said, Drew, is that people don't hold the sanctity of marriage anymore as you know, up where it should be. And we run into this a lot in our daily lives where we will meet couples that are married and it's like they don't like each other, they don't like to spend time together, and so the woman goes out, does her thing, the man goes out and does his thing, and communication breaks down, and you really don't know why they're together in the first place. And so there's definitely no procreation going on there in a relationship where it's that broken, where you don't trust each other to be one like you're supposed to be when you get married.
Wow. And do you know what the kids call it now? You know, they used to say, like, how many notches on your belt? Does anybody know what the kids call notches on your belt now? Does anybody know?
Yeah,
Please,
body
what is
count.
it?
Body count. It's so
Stop.
disgusting.
Yeah,
Body
I
count.
know.
Like they're dead. Like they're dead. And I'm like, what? Like, I have a lot
Brings
of
a whole new meaning
teenagers.
to slaying hood rats, doesn't
Oh my gosh. I was
it?
shook.
My God,
I was
Drew,
like,
what's wrong with you, man?
what?
Hood
Oh
rats?
no, I love it. But it's
Drew's
true.
in the naughty
That's what they call
chair.
it. That's what they call it
Dark.
now.
They
My
do. And
niece
my son.
asked what my body count was. And I was like, girl, if you ever, this is something you need to talk to your health teacher about because
You do
I
murder
share nothing about
podcasts was the
my
first
body
thing.
count.
You do murder
What?
podcasts was the first thing you thought of. Like, I've never killed anyone.
That
Body
we know
count. And
of.
then she explained it to me. I was like, girl, you are too young to be worried about counting anybody's body. Keep to your own body,
Exactly.
body of
Yeah.
one
But
in
count your
Christ.
body. Count you.
Yeah.
Oh, I was shocked when this came up. And then my son was like, oh, it doesn't matter anymore. Like, girls don't even keep it. Like, and I always ask him, like, why don't you date more girls? And he's like, have you seen high school? No. He's like, I'll just wait. He's like, it isn't that important. It's fine. He's like so distraught about the people that are, and this is in a very, like, we live in Utah. This is a very conservative area-ish. And he's like, Mom, it's just not even, no. He's like, you have no idea. And I'm like, great. You know, he's like, it's, I'll just
That's
wait.
kind of a beautiful thing, though, because that's an indication of the way that he was raised, because that's what we're supposed to do, is raise up our children in the ways of God. And he's recognizing that he's important enough to wait until God provides him with the proper partner.
Yeah, he's like,
It
I don't
brings up
even
a great
want to,
thing.
yeah, do
It brings up
this.
a great parallel, though. The idea that you mentioned a conservative group, but there's still that sexual immorality that goes on. Now, this is before I found God, so please don't judge me too much. I will admit this, that as a young guy from a public
You had a
school
high
in high
body
school,
count. He was slaying hood
our,
rats.
air quotes, the targets, the girls that were the easier ones to get were the Catholic schoolgirls
Oh
because they
boy.
put out. And that seems to
I was going to say
a common trend.
I know what you're saying because I went to Catholic school and there were, you know, it wasn't me, so don't think that. But there were like people that I went to school with, they were the very first ones to get pregnant and have kids out of wedlock all the time, hands down. Because it was easy, because they, I don't know if it's because people were so like pent up from being so controlled that they just all went berserk. I don't know.
That's how the Mormon it's girls the thing are. About They're the, too sheltered. Yep.
It's mm-hmm. the forbidden fruit. Like you say, don't do this, don't do this, don't do this. And all you have on your mind is doing it. And that's how all little kids are. You're like, don't touch the hot stove. Don't touch the hot stove. There goes their freaking little hand up there trying to get over to it. Mm-hmm. And that's how it is. Like, I'm not saying that, you know, everyone is juvenile, but if you keep telling someone, don't do this, don't do this, don't do this, that's the first thing on their mind that they want to do. And I grew up in church. I get it. The church girls are the freak-a-leaks. Like, they were so ready to get, like, out of their parents' house, and they can't tell me what to do anymore, and I'm going to do my own thing and whatever. But, you know, as adults, I'm still friends with a lot of those people. And they're like, if I could go back in time, I probably wouldn't have been so like cray. Yeah. And I'm like, yeah, same here.
Yeah.
Sorry, go for it, John.
This topic is the same as the original sin topic for me. Like, God, I'm like, Abraham, I'm just dust, but I'd like to ask you something. if I ran the universe, I would do it differently. Like, you give me this Maserati, and then I'm only allowed to drive it around like 5 miles an hour. And then you come over to the New Testament, it's worse. Because Jesus says, if you look upon a woman to lust, you've committed adultery. So the standard that God has for his creation is so narrow that it seems impossible, but it can't be impossible because it's in the book. So this is a big one. This is what Jonathan Edwards calls bosom sins. They're lodged deep within our heart. And it is another one of those tests where you are required to die to self like nobody's business on this front, because it's always there. You know, it's not like a drug you got to go get. This is a big problem. In fact, I just saw the Hotel Association had a report that the highest use of pornography was during Christian conferences.
Oh, my gosh.
So what does that tell you?
Why am I not surprised?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Is this the subtle and conniving way that the bad guy, air quotes, uses against us? Because I would go as far as to say that, not to be crude, the feeling of sex is a gift from God, especially when it's with your loved partner and you're going through the motions of procreation, starting a family. The feeling you get from it is a gift from God. So to turn something that's supposed to be pure and feels good into almost like an addictive drug, something you chase, like multiple sexual partners, having sex, going, swiping right, all these types of things we see in modern sexual culture, it's just emphasizing and manipulating, weaponizing the good and the true aspects of it and inverting mm-hmm. it.
Yeah.
Well,
I saw
so
this
easily
book.
Accessible.
Oh, I've talked a lot. Go ahead, John.
Oh, I was just going to say, I saw this book in the library or bookstore. It was on Satanism. And it said the purpose of Satanism is self-indulgence. So therefore, by deduction, the purpose of Christianity is self-denial. And if you've ever gone on a fast, when you come off it, everything tastes phenomenal. So there's certain laws at work in this realm that the less you do something, the more enjoyable it is. So part of the whole of abstinence requirement is actually the doorway to a fulfilling life. It isn't addiction and indulgence. And I've drank the cup of devils down to the bottom, and it leaves you empty and it doesn't work. So God's plan works, but it ain't easy.
Within the realm of sex, we see the exact opposite with people who suffer from sex addiction. They have it so often, so many ways, they need more and more perverse ways of getting off.
Exactly.
It's that pipeline going down to the most bizarre, crazy, heinous things you could ever think of, because everything else is vanilla now. They need
and
that
then you
next
get
high.
A serial killer. because yes. they can't. Right. That's the next step is death. It's like it doesn't do it for me unless they're dead. And then they have sex with the dead bodies, and then you it like goes into like necrophilia and like that. If that is straight up demonic, like you've now opened a doorway, and you have now become host for a demonic being to enter your body.
Yep.
You now have a parasitic demonic infestation in your body.
Well, and the fact is I'm sorry, like this day and age, like porn is so accessible. And I think it's funny because as to Drew's point, when they're sex addicts, right, they almost get immune. Go ask a gynecologist how he feels about seeing any more crotch, okay? He doesn't care. I work with them. They're like, it's a dime to whatever, you know, who cares unless it's something really horrible. Like, really, that's all. The only time is if there's like a physical anomaly, not horrible, but like something wrong. And so at that point, you have to wonder, why then do people just do it again and do it again and do it again? Like, okay, guys, I get it. It's out there now. It's not a magazine you have to go buy in the brown paper sack at the corner. It's not humiliating like that anymore. But also, like, just try to not go down that realm, because like you said, it leads to these weird octopus and Asian girls stuff, weird stuff, like just not normal, right? It's weird. Like,
I'm Janet sorry. Is officially laughing
because her. Janet and I have pulled more foreign objects out of anyone than we would care to name. Mm-hmm. And here's the thing, like people get crazy, you know?
Right. Yeah. That is true. And the amount of things that I saw over the years that I'm like, what?
Why?
What possessed you to do that? But we are so ingrained to be like creatures of habit that people, once they watch porn one time, then they're hooked. And then they have to check out literally every kind of porn they can possibly think of. Or, you know, like Julia mentioning about sex, and, you know, when you have it a long time or have it a lot, you got to do other things to get that same gratification that you would if you were abstaining or only doing it with your partner, because that's what we're supposed to be doing. But for some reason, it's really hard for some people to shut off that pleasure center in the brain and just not.
Well, it's a dopamine hit, isn't it? Dopamine's an addictive drug substance.
Right.
It's complete compulsion, because the weirdest things is like they have all night stores for all kinds of apparatuses, but the things that we pull out of people are never the correct things that are supposed to be in there, ever. It's like remote controls, cue balls, weird statues,
toilet carrots, brushes.
I mean,
hell no.
And I'm telling
that
you
is
guys,
some nasty. Oh yeah. My God, Brandon, I need to hear your thoughts on all this. Yeah. You've been quiet for too long.
We're going to make him answer this.
No, I'm not going to go on that. But as somebody who grew up in a home where my mother, as opposed to coming forward and calling out what my dad was doing, she went into alcoholism. And I noted, as a writer, I tend to vent in lyrical form. And one of the things that I penned for that was, when you're dead inside, you live for a thrill. And I think that's kind of what most of society is. They lack purpose. So this is what they've evolved into, is I need something. I need a stimulant. I need an addiction, which will be phase three. But I honestly think, and again, folks, don't take this the wrong way, ladies in the room, I think this all started, especially in America, with the rise of voting and feminism. And again, I don't believe in voting, so don't take this the wrong way. I think, honestly, what they did, they were like, okay, we have slavery. We got rid of slavery. They did child labor. Then they got child labor. And everybody's like, okay, that's a bad idea. Nobody likes that. So what do we do? So they're thinking, as they have these meetings every year to determine what they're going to do with the rest of this world, they say, well, what if we give women the right to vote? Why would we do that? Well, you know, we could just gradually make them start making them think and think, you know, that they can become independent. They can become their own thing. That the Victorian London rules of society, they're old. We don't need those anymore. So this was the first trigger. And then as we keep on going, we get to the sexual revolution of the 70s. Where's most of the men at that time in America? They're over there fighting overseas. So the home is already missing dad. The women have now have doubled their workforce. They have slavery of people working in factories now. They need two people to work. So they're getting busy. They're getting consumed that I have to work in order to make a living. Kids are now growing up with one dad, and they have the sexual revolution kicking in. I think that's phase two of feminism. So eventually, what does this do? This starts creating a society in the 80s. I need a stimulant. I need something to make me feel alive because I didn't have that dad figure. I need to rebel. And then we get the whole 80s rock session. Why? Because people were angry. They didn't have an outlet. So they started tapping into the crazy occultic stuff and going to heavy rock music because it made them feel alive. It stimulated something in them. And it's all by societal design. And now what do we get in our today's society? We're impulsive with how we come to a conclusion. We don't think with logic. We think with our emotions. It's a feministic society, is that we just automatically jump on board. Oh, yeah, go to war. Do this, do that. And it's not, should we sit down and think about this spiritually? Should we sit down and pray about what, you know, for he who seeks for wisdom, I will give it to him abundantly. We don't have that anymore. Now it's, I'm my own man. I worked my own way. With women, it's, I'm my own woman. But what do we see? Like, if they don't get a guy in most of college, like from the ages of 21 to 30, what do we see a skyrocketing statistics going on for? They adopt a dog. Why? Because it's compensating for wanting to take care of a small mammal. There's nothing wrong with that. That's a natural design to be maternal to something. But now you're putting all that energy onto an animal as opposed to nurturing a home. Why? Because they've given you this Disney princess complex, how to think about relationships. And your expectations are so high for the guy. And what's the guy do? If I ask her out at work, that's an HR harassment report. So they go home and become digital online warriors because it's an outlet. It's, I feel like I can conquer something because I can't deal with all of that. And then they become, like I said, that's what would gravitate them towards porn. We never talk about the women aspect, but it's like, if that's what I have to compete with, like Heidi was saying, conservatives are always saying like, we have values, we have this. But the minute they lose an election, they're wearing the F-bomb on their t-shirt and chanting that in a stadium. I just want to watch the game with my kid. You think this is right? Well, no, that's what I'm saying. But I'm saying that's what we create in our society. We don't have any standards as conservatives. What are we conserving? If we don't get our way, we just throw a temper tantrum. And again, I'm not into politics, so don't anybody take that the wrong way. I'm just saying how I think that's influenced the church. And how it's kind of crept in, and now it's mixed with our ideology of, you know, Jesus was a socialist and all this other crazy stuff.
I have a question actually for Brandon really quick.
Uh-oh.
Just really quick, I have a question for Brandon. Do you think, because I know like in Saudi Arabia, they wear the saris and they cover their face and they cover their head. I do, like, anytime I watch like a Bible story, the women are wearing something similar. And I feel like that was supposed to, because you're not supposed to be showing your bits and parts and stuff, like the clothing that's acceptable to wear now, and like you're pretty much revealing everything. And I don't know, I like, is there anywhere in the Bible where it says like you should cover your body like that? Like,
well, women, I think it's implied more... It's implied by Paul that women should at least cover their hair, but I think that was more so is because of the sins of the angels. It's semi in that vein. I think it's basically, don't be showy. Don't wear things that are provocative. Don't wear, like you were just stating earlier, don't wear things that are drawing attention for the wrong reasons and wrong purposes. And I think that is honestly what society has evolved into, is that they're doing that because they want the attention, but it's the wrong kind of attention. It's not proper. It's not pure. And again, that goes back into the communion. Dad would select, and then they have the man drink of the wine, and then they look at her and say, hey, you want to finish the rest of this glass? If you do, you're accepting the contract of this guy I've selected. Whereas if you say no, it's fine. We go back to the drawing board. So for that, it was like, it wasn't a patriarch society. It was, I'm going to select somebody. I'm going to get out all the extra playing mind games and whatnot. I'm going to find somebody that's got good character. He can provide for you. He's going to, you know, why? Because I care about your purity as an individual. I know what you can contribute to a home and in society. I'm watching out for your well-being to make sure you don't become somebody that's judged like the woman at the well. That's what that whole beauty of that ceremony. And again, when we're as Christians choosing that cup, we are choosing the Father's Son. We are accepting that gift and all that comes with it. And that's, again, the Garden of Gethsemane is so beautiful. He goes, Father, if you could let this cup pass from me, I realize the responsibility that this is going on. And then what Paul writes, you know, to lay down your life for the church. So I think, honestly, humility is covering yourself up. But again, you're not doing humility as in like the scribes and Pharisees covering yourself, but you're doing it in a sense is that I want to maintain my purity. That's what the significance of a veil is all about. And until that veil's ripped in two, you're not going to understand what the gift of the Holy Spirit is.
Well, even the idea of makeup was a magic, air quotes, gifted to him and by angels, right?
Mm-hmm. Right. So,
cosmic, cosmology.
Whoa. Let's back off with this stuff now.
Technology. So if we're going to have homes and own things, then we women can give up the makeup because we're also not supposed to have ownership of
respectfully disagree. I'm so addicted to my makeup.
No, that's only if we all were perfect, like, and we gave up like owning anything and like all this. There's a lot of things that the angels gave us that we shouldn't have, including technology and what we're on right now. But I do agree with Brandon, except for on one point on the compulsion thought with women and having that be like, let's just go to war right now. Actually, there is far more compulsion in men. And as working in a mental health facility, I can tell you compulsion and addiction runs hard and strong in one sex over the other. I would say probably 3-1. And so I'm just saying that I think the combination of the two was always meant to be on equal. Yeah, for sure. Because
that's why the union of marriage is so important, because you've got nature and nurture together, and you're supposed to come together to form one person.
Yes.
And so that's, you're supposed to balance each other out. But to Brandon's point, I agree with you on the feminism front, because when all of that was brought forth, we forgot about, you know, the importance of our households and our families. And it's like, well, I'm just as important as my husband. No, that is so anti-biblical, because the husband is the head of the household. He is supposed to be the leader, the spiritual leader, and the teacher of the household. He's supposed to be in charge.
Which kind of comes back to the idea of it's a political analogy from American context. A house divided cannot stand. If we don't have strong houses and strong families, how are we ever going to have a strong society built on a strong moral framework led by faith? Mm-hmm. It's perfect what they've done. They've divided the man and the woman. It's absolutely shattered society.
Oh, right. And they did that on purpose. I will say too, that in relationships where people are married and there's children from previous marriages or whatever, if the spouse does not put their spouse first, and they put their children first, that is a problem with God, and that marriage is going to have so many problems. And it's not built on a strong foundation. You should never put your children before your spouse.
I can see should not this happen, because I have had marriage where I'm married now and he has kids and I have kids and then we have kids together. But for the first few years of our marriage, we did not cooperate well on this front, because it wasn't actually me, because most women do this to men instead, where they're like, my children are first, no matter what, blah, blah, blah. And I'm like, I'm not like that. But he was like that. And I finally said, listen to me, you are hurting our marriage because you're idolizing your child, and you're idolizing him in such a negative way that he's never going to become a man. You're not teaching him how to be a head of a household or anything. You're just teaching him he can have his way no matter. And so, long story short, it went on for quite some time, and it, thank heavens, it, I don't know what happened exactly, but there, my brother passed away. There was a whole bunch of really bad things. And I think at that point where he stepped up a little harder, and he did put his, you know, hand down with that boy, because he was getting in all kinds of trouble. And now the son is a dad. Just barely. I just became a grandma again. And he sent his dad the most beautiful text thanking him for that later. So it does help in the scheme of things at a later point. Like, maybe not in the moment, because they want what they want, but it does. And it helped our marriage, you know? So
I we think see it's that. Also, sorry.
I was just going to say, we see that in modern day society. How many young single mothers are on dating apps looking for a relationship, but in their bio it says, my son is my king and I do everything for my child. It's great to have your child's best interests at hand, but if you're actively looking for a relationship, looking for a new father for your son or your daughter, you have to have that balancing act there. You can't say, I'm in it for my son and he's the king. Where are you putting your priorities in that relationship? That's destroyed relationship already.
You know that is called an enmeshed relationship, and that is actually happening to tons of boys, and mostly boys in our society nowadays, mama's boys, but actually the mother is, and this is from a clinical therapist, psychiatrist, they said they are making them non-sexual husbands, non-sexual husbandry to the child, who therefore feels inadequate because he is, because he's like 13 and he doesn't know how to be the man of the house because he certainly has never, he shouldn't be in that position, honestly. And now you've made them that and you've made them an idol. And let me tell you, I made my daughter an idol, and God didn't, but God allowed that to be taken from me. And I promise you, and she's alive and everything. It just isn't, I'm estranged, not by my choice, but it is something that you never want to face it through that way to understand the circle, right? Like, 'cause now I get it, but I mean, you pray for restoration, but it gave her so much power over me, over our family, over everything. Not because she didn't have control like my stepson did. We messed up on the two oldest. It's like pancakes. The first ones never turn out. But like the next one, super good. No, we love them to death. And later they grow. But like with my daughter, I just look back and say, oh my gosh, I allowed this. It wasn't so much that she ruled the roost like he did, but like what happened was he got really into drugs and harmed himself. She got really into herself and is harming herself by being so selfish and harming everyone around her. Like she literally posted the other day that song, I Will Buy You a New Life, and thought that was a good thing because the dude was buying her a garden. And I just almost threw up in my mouth because I was like, that's so disgusting. That's so yucky to me. Like, that's great that he bought you a garden, but buying you a new life, like, why? You are still you. Like, you're a beautiful, beautiful person, you know, who you were. You should never change your core humanity for anything or anyone except Christ, period. You know?
And that whole relationship of, you know, like the parent idolizing their child, like Drew was talking about, where you're looking for a partner for a lifelong relationship, but you're telling everybody you're always going to come last. My kid's always going to be first. And Heidi and I have a mutual friend in common that this is going on in their household, and the child who is 10 is ruling the household and controlling the narrative and controlling the parents' behavior and controlling, you know, what kind of mood is in the household because it has been allowed to go on and continue, and that the child's become in charge.
And it's a bad position to put them in because they do not know what to do in charge. And then they end up on drugs, pregnant, sexual promiscuity, some crazy thing.
Joining gangs.
I mean, yeah, exactly. Yep. Yeah, yep. It's not good. We're supposed to be parents. For
it's an inverted pyramid.
Fathers are supposed to be fathers for a reason. And that is just so important.
Yeah, but Heidi, Heidi, think about it though. Like, most of my friends that are my age, they don't even know for sure who their baby daddy is.
Yeah.
No, it was like, well, issue. it could be, listen, this, I will not mention names because it would be humiliating, but she was like, it could be this person, or this person. I told this person it was his though, because he has a government job and the child support is really good. He never doubted it enough to get a paternity test, but she goes, it could be one of these three. They all look kind of similar, but this one I know has a really good job. And so she's been saying it's his because she knew she was going to get child support. This is the problem, though, is like people have hot draws and they just want to drop them as fast as they can with as many dudes as they can, and then they get pregnant, and it's like, first off, getting pregnant is a miracle, and it's not the baby's fault, and a lot of people wish that they could be in that situation to have a baby, but it's then like, okay, now, because you're an idiot, that kid's going to grow up. If it's a boy, they're going to grow up and not know how to be a husband and not know how to love right and do all the things that a husband should do.
Not because they didn't really know who their dad was.
Well, or maybe they're not even involved in their life, because we go through this with our daughter that's gay, and we always say, listen, I don't care that you're gay, but now you're talking about bringing babies into this. And here's our thing on it is like, her dad was so important to her growing up. Like, they were very close. And I say, what about the dad? Like, well, I'm going to be there. I'm like, you're not a dad. I don't care how masculine you want to dress. You're still a girl. And even if you want to change everything and cut it all off, you'll still be a girl because you're a girl. And you have ovaries and stuff.
Either. Yeah, it's like you can't teach somebody how to pee with a penis.
No,
there are certain things you're never going to understand. Now, here's my other thing about that too, is like, let's say you don't care who your baby daddy is, and you're like, I don't need a man, because that's a new mentality that a lot of women have nowadays, is I don't need a man. I can be my own man. And so they're raising a daughter in this type of mindset, and then she gets older and she's looking for a potential relationship, somebody to be with, and she's like, well, I don't actually need you, but I want to have sex with you, and you can split bills with me, and when the pickle jar is screwed on too tight, you can open it, but I don't actually need you. I'm my own man, or whatever. And it's just like a weird cycle now, where it's like, I don't even need a husband, I don't even need a relationship, and if I do, I can get on Tinder and I can find somebody real quick. I can go have sex with them. And like,
there's no,
everybody is kind of like, it was like John was saying, like, I know I'm dust, but I would like to have a loving relationship with someone, get married, have kids, love God, go to church. Like, those are things that I hold
and divorcees
in high
too.
Regard.
Yeah. Divorcees acting like dads are not important. Like, oh, it's, I mean, I had a absentee dad in my kids' life and begged him. I begged him. I was like, I'll buy him a cell phone so you don't have to hear my dumb voice. Like, anything, just be in their life, be in their life. He wouldn't do it because he just cared about drugs at that point. But here's the thing. I still tried because I knew how important it was. And there's women out there saying like, well, you don't matter. What is that teaching people? Like, everyone matters in their own way. Like, come on. It matters. You know, you can take away a lot of things, but these things do matter. Yes, you can create a baby with a sperm donor at the clinic, but I promise you that kid's going to have issues unless it's got some dad there. Like, if it's in a, I mean, if there's a dad there, like, that's fine. But it's just not, it's not how it's supposed to be.
Correct me if I'm wrong. And I don't even know if this is biblical, but I've always held in my mind that I love my husband so much that I want to have a little him running around. Like, I love him so much and I know he would be such a good dad that I would, even though he's crazy and sometimes I want to wring his neck, I would want to make a little version
every
of him to run around my house and, you know, and I've always thought that it's like having children with someone that you barely even know if that it was them who fathered it, or you're not in love with them, or there's no type of spirituality between the two. Like, you don't feel connected in any way. And I don't know. I think it's just backwards. I think you should just love that other person so much. Like, you always meet somebody that, I never wanted to have kids until I met my wife, or I never wanted to have kids until I met my husband. Mm-hmm. And I'm kind of one of those people. It wasn't like on the forefront of my mind, but now it's all I can think about because I love him so much. And I just feel like that would be very fulfilling for us. But I mean,
is that the purpose of children? The Bible. I think the purpose of children is the ultimate expression of love.
Mm.
It is the greatest gift that God has given to mankind. He loves us, and through that love and a love for each other, we can bring life into the world. Mm. We aren't gods like God created life of man, but it's still an expression of our love. We're able to create a little human being, which is a piece of both of us, and is still connected to God. It's the ultimate expression of love.
And it's also like, I can imagine having the one child and like you guys were saying, like idolizing it because it's like, oh my God, I finally have my baby. But think of the sacrifice that God gave for us. Jesus is that sacrifice, and he loved Jesus so much, and he was willing to sacrifice him for us because he loved us that much. So it's just, you know, the whole story is so beautiful, and it applies to everyone's lives, because anyone who has kids or wants kids knows how much they would love their child. And like, to imagine sacrificing them, that you couldn't even fathom that. So, yeah. But he paid that price for us. And then you have people, well, I just don't understand all of it. And it's like, I'm a human being, so I make mistakes and all these rules. Hello. Whether you believe in Christ or not, you should still live by some type of moral compass. I just have never understood all these rules. I was just telling Heidi the other day, like, what? Don't stab a guy? Don't lie to someone's face? Don't, I mean, like, what are the rules?
Let me just write those ones up. Don't stab a guy. Yeah, that checks out.
T-shirt.
And those of us that are parents in this day and age, I will say that there is a growing, dramatic movement of untethering yourself from parents, and that parents all did everything wrong. And so now we're going to move on with our best life. And, you know, you guys did it all wrong. We don't need you people anymore. We're going to go do this better, far better than you could ever dream of. And I'm sorry, that is wild, because they'll also use, I never asked to be born. Yeah. Oh yeah. I know. It's totally.
Who's that remind you of? The council, right?
Yeah, for sure.
And it's like, we can do this better. We know more than you do. And mm-hmm. kids will do the exact same thing. They certainly mm-hmm. do.
John, and you've been quiet for far too long. I need to hear something from you, John.
Yeah, I hope we haven't scared you off with our naughtiness.
No. The issue of the church is a good topic, because this whole idea of sex addiction and the church is a taboo topic. Like, if you testify God delivered me from alcohol, and you know, everybody will be like, praise the Lord. But if you come up to the front and say, I was delivered from sex addiction, and then after a while you're talking to Joe and Sally and they got a little 13-year-old daughter, they're like pushing her behind you, you know. I've seen churches try to do, you know, address this, but it's just so much shame associated to our sexuality that people that do struggle with this, which is most men, have to go outside the church and try to find help, because it's a lot of complex childhood trauma drives this, because, you know, acting out is not the problem, it's the solution. Your problem is you're not a nice person, you have a resentment tapes you run in your head all day, and you have self-hatred. And you have all of this stuff that's a seething cauldron of unresolved emotions just burning in your belly all the time. And this, you got to medicate it. So the only way out is, you know, a personal development path, fire of God, studying the word. But those topics are so taboo. Like, people in the church will just tell you, you need to read the word more.
Yeah.
And they don't realize that the word bounces off of complex childhood trauma. You've got to get into the mix of, and it's almost like losing an arm. If you lose an arm, you can get an appendage, but you still have lost an arm. You basically have to learn to live with it, and you can slowly rise above it and live. But the church is pretty unequipped. It's like alcoholism. The alcoholics came to the church, and the church looked down their nose at them. And then they went off and started AA because the church was ill-equipped. And this is another one that they're totally ill-equipped for. And I don't know what the answers are, because it's an epidemic of an issue.
John, can I add something to that and get your thoughts on this? The church is also, in a lot of ways, the physical institution of church, I would say, has an historical precedence of making this type of stuff worse. And what I mean by that is that church leaders, leaders of faith, at one point in history, could have families. They could have rich, fulfilling relationships, loved ones, children. At the point where they changed that and made it a sin or something you can't do, you have to give yourself up to God for life, that opened the doorway for a lot of sexual predators not only to be attracted to the idea of power, but into an institution where they know they can't have sex on the outside, but their baseline evil predatory desires still exist, in which they influence that power over victims within the church.
Are you talking about the Catholics taking vows of celibacy? What do you mean when you say no sex?
One aspect.
Yes, yeah, one aspect of that, and how we see, say, predators within the realms of larger institutions of church. And we not just church in general. It's, you could say it can be applied to multiple aspects of society.
Ministry.
Ministry, Boy Scout leaders, people which are in a positions of power, but within the church itself, men who have taken a vow of celibacy but still have the baseline desires. It almost seems to attract a person with a very, very broken moral compass.
Can I give an example of this?
Yeah, please do.
I'll give an example. BTK killer. Cub Scout
just
leader.
Heard about him last night, sorry.
Yeah, and he was like the deacon of his church. Mm-hmm. Slicing and dicing people. Like, literally, BTK, Cub Scout leader. Go ahead, John. Sorry.
That dude was cold as ice, man. He talked about his programs. That's what he called them. I had a program I was running. It was so chilling. Listen to the guy when he was busted and he was talking in court. But I don't know. The world is a mess. You know, people with sexual addiction are everywhere. It doesn't really matter what the institution is. They're everywhere. If you go to those websites that show you where the convicted sex offenders are, there's right down the street. They're all around you.
Yeah, America looks like it's got measles when all the dots
exactly
are on it. Right.
Yeah.
Well, I want to add to what John was saying about people, you know, that can't really give their testimony in front of church leaders, because the church is full of very judgmental people as a whole. They should be accepting of those people, not automatically, instinctually hiding their 13-year-old child behind somebody when you hear somebody's a sex addict, because God put that drive and desire in us in the first place. It's a natural thing to have a sex drive. He put it there for a reason. But I think a lot of people are very turned off by the church in general, right? Churchiosity, business of church in general, because they don't know how to deal with addiction. They don't know how to deal with abuse or traumas or any of that kind of stuff. And so their idea, like John said, is just, okay, read God's word. That's not going to help somebody that's struggling.
Yeah.
And the last thing that somebody needs when they're trying to be vulnerable and tell you that they have an issue with sex addiction or drug addiction or whatever the case may be, that's the last thing they need, is somebody to be judgmental of them for being vulnerable enough to say something.
Read harder doesn't cut it, does it? Just go back and read it harder.
Or bring the ruler, right? No, that doesn't work.
Well, I think that's the problem. Is I think we've really changed church as opposed to discipleship. It's become corporation.
Right.
It's just, you already have the manual, so why don't you just read the manual again? It's like, I need help. Discipleship is getting down and washing my feet. Discipleship is saying, I'll come to your house, Zacchaeus, because you were looking for me. I'm going to come to you. That's what it is coming halfway to meet somebody. That's even what marriage is. Is 50-50? No, 100-100. Because you're giving them 200%, you can't fail. And just to tap in what Heidi was saying, I was laughing because when you're talking about father, like set apart, she said that phrase and that immediately triggered what I was doing with my research. When we have St. Peter, you break that down, they're getting that from the Latin sky god of the underworld. It's another equivalent of Cernonus. So CERN. Dis set apart, that's what that equates to. Patar means father. It's a set apart father. And that's now what you're calling your Catholic father, the Pope. And it makes me laugh because it's like, no, the whole beauty of what Christ did is now my Father can come in and indwell you with the Holy Spirit. Whereas now in Catholicism, you're saying, no, he's over there. You have to send him money. You get all these, you know, fans. And it's no, it's so much more personal and intimate in getting to know who the Father is. And I think, again, that's why I tap into the beauty of the ripping of the veil. That was saying the priest would wear white robe, just like a bride. He would go in there once or twice a year. And what did that mean? It says, you guys no longer need someone to intercede for you because now I can indwell you. That's a gift. And the thing is, I think that's what with the bridesmaids is five understood. Thy word is a lamp unto my feet. So they have their lamps. They got their oil. Well, what is oil? The ones that fell asleep. That's Holy Spirit discernment. And I think that's even a reason why Gethsemane was called oil press. And he's like, can you guys not stay awake? They didn't understand the parable. They didn't understand what we were building up to, this exact premise and moment. So they fell asleep because they didn't understand what the oil is. And I think that's honestly what a lot of people don't get is like, there's a lot of bridesmaids going through the motions, but they've not been discipling anybody with what they have. And this goes back to Hosea. My people perish for a lack of knowledge. And because you have rejected knowledge, I will reject you from being my priest, and I will forget your children. That's terrifying, folks. He doesn't say that phrase, depart from me, I never knew you. He says that to Christians. Why? Because we weren't discipling. We were being corporate. And very well, my whole background church, I was open, I was vulnerable, and I'm over here like, I'm dealing with trauma as a kid. I'm close to almost doing myself in. And what am I getting? Oh, I'm sorry you went through that. That sounds really rough. Just read your Bible more. So it was a good thing I read the book Pagan Christianity by Frank Viola, because that helped me get out of the mindset of what are we getting wrong in the church, because I want to do it right.
Brandon, that gave me some chills. I'm not going to lie. I don't hear people talking about that very often, because it's very true. And like he says, I'm the father to the fatherless, which is becoming such an epidemic nowadays too. Is like, you know, my dad was not a great dad, and he wasn't really super in my life or anything. Well, he was, but I wish he wasn't, because he was horrible. But my sister used to tell that to me, and it was so comforting. She would say, Julie, he's the father to the fatherless. And I was like, you're right. You know, there's such peace in that. And people search so long and so hard for healing and peace, and they think they're going to get it from all these things of the world. And they, you know, they put crystals all over and sage their whole house, and they still don't have healing and peace. And that comes from Jesus. Like, it comes from the Prince of Peace. So, I mean, I just don't get it. People are just so hungry for peace and so hungry for healing, and they hate the thought of it could not just be as simple as being a Christian. It could not be that simple. They want it to be very esoteric, and they want it to be very confusing, and they want it to be very complex. Like, okay, yeah, that must be it, because it makes me want to have diarrhea every time I think about it. Like, no, it shouldn't make you sick to your stomach. The and thought want, of it should just be easy.
And they want all the answers at the same time. They don't want any kind of ambiguity or any faith or trust in something else. They have to know the ins and outs of it. They have to dissect it, put it back together to understand it, so they can actually follow it. Does anyone else have anything to weigh in on before we move on to the last topic? No? Okay. Let's move on to pornography, the subversion of man's animalistic-based desires, and more. Pornography can be likened to the bite of a vicious serpent. It is deadly venom that enters through the soul. Although this poison is not deadly in one dose, the serpent is relentless. Through repeated and progressive attacks, the serpent's victims become increasingly unable to resist. Remember, Satan is a patient predator. He doesn't present his corrupted view of reality all at once, but rather step by step, lie by lie, as he sees the target ready to accept the next dose. And this is what we kind of touched on earlier when we talk about sex addiction. The addiction of pornography has that incrementalism. It starts off very normal, very vanilla. Far often more than not, you see straight men, air quotes, start off with regular pornography, and they'll transition into transgender porn and into all kinds of kind of really sick, twisted stuff. But it's that gateway incrementalism of this this ultimate weapon that's being put onto humanity, that is pornography.
Because it goes
and
back
sometimes
to forbidden fruit.
It's like, yeah, they don't want to be with an actual woman because they can't, like, that doesn't do it for them anymore. They would rather be alone and watch their real, like, disgusting, whatever it is, like, two girls, one cup will do it for them. But, like, just being with a normal girl who, you know, it just wants missionary, like, that's not going to do it for them anymore. Like, that's when you know you have a serious problem. I think that the accessibility of it is also the problem, because it's on your phone for free. They say there's no such thing as a free lunch. They made it free because everyone knows their site. They have their preferred site and they go onto it. They know, okay, this category, this is, I mean, it's so accessible. They don't even check your age when you just type it
just
in.
Click
boom,
yes. I am
right
over
there.
18.
Yeah.
I wouldn't say it's free. You're paying for it with something else. And right. I almost liken it to, it's like a God complex, because these men, they don't have to, or women, don't have to try. They don't have to go out and talk to people. They don't have to build relationships. They can put in all their presets. I want a blonde with blue eyes. I want her to have a big donk donk butt. All these types of things that they like, they find appealing. They can just type in and they can find thousands upon thousands of hours to satiate their lust. There's no actual work in building a genuine relationship. So in that way, they're almost playing the pseudo god and finding and getting exactly what they want at their fingertips.
Well, and
I think
I
it's confusing
like
people's sexuality too. Sorry, go ahead, Heidi.
Oh, no, I had this talk with my son because it's distorting. I mean, you have to do it nowadays. My son's 16, but we had this talk a long time ago, probably about 12, because I knew it was going to come up regardless of what I tried to do. Like it was, he has a phone. And so I just told him, I want you to know something. No female, and I've seen more females downstairs than most people would ever care to think about, because I did labor and delivery for years and ER for years and all these things. So I said, listen, I've seen porn and I've seen real life, and most women don't look like that. Most women do not have the same color of dye downstairs as what is being dyed onto their parts, because that is not natural and or realistic. Most women do not have stretch marks. Most women and men, most men do not have etched abs that are all perfect. Like, it is crazy bananas. Like, this is not real. And so I told my son, if you inundate yourself with this, not only does it take away reality and it makes you outside yourself. If you do have that you know, intimate relationship with someone someday, you might be thinking about that instead. But also it takes away from like, oh, I've never seen a girl naked and I actually like this girl and we actually ended up together and like I saw a boob for the first time and it was a real one, not some crazy thing that I saw on the internet with a cherry colored nipple. Like, that's crazy. And so I'm just like, what? And so I told him the truth. I said, this is just not the way it is. Like, I'm sorry. And you like Latina girls, so we got to have a talk, because this is the real life thing here. And he's like, you know what, Mom? I'm not. And my son, I got really blessed with a good son. And he's like, yeah, no, I know. I have a bunch of sisters and you're my mom. Like, I get it. Like, that's not real. And I'm like, I just don't want you to think someday that that's like how your wife is going to be. And even if she is, say she's perfect in every way, someday she's going to have a baby. Someday she's going to age. Someday she's going to have something go wrong. You know, you can't. It's such a false. It makes us easy to say, well, she's not good enough anymore because she has two stretch marks, so I'm going to find me another one. But on the flip side of that, for the men, it also is like, oh, I can't really compete with this whole situation that women want. They want the portfolio and the perfect everything, and I got to have etched abs and biceps like crazy. And I just don't know if I want that kind of pressure, so I'm just going to stick with this phone. Like, because I get it. It's like anxiety causing too. You know, it's, I see both sides of the coin, because.
Yeah, but it's like I said, you're supposed to fall in love with someone. Absolutely. And you're supposed to love them so much. Like I was saying, like if they had a baby, you would still love that person so much that if their physical appearance changed, you'd still just be just as much in love with that person. I mean, you would hope that's so, not what right? people are looking yeah. for. People are yeah. looking for the physical first, which there does has to be some aspect of physical attraction when you first meet someone. But then the rest comes, you know, first you're physically attracted and then yada, yada, yada. But like for kids, it's like you were saying, Heidi, it's so distorted and it's like some weird this like that's supposed to be like some kind of a fantasy. And now they're trying to make it into like a reality where you should look like this and want all those things that the person in the video is doing.
Right.
You know, you should want it like that. Like, I don't want it. This is a Christian podcast, no, but you know what I'm going. Saying? Like they're flipping and twisting them and they're doing like crazy stuff. And like,
women I are told just my kids,
well, if I don't do that, happens? he won't like it because, you know, he saw it in all these videos. So therefore I have to fake it and pretend like I like to be upside down with like chained up and bound and gagged and all this stuff. It's like, no, I pack that's not real.
Once you pack someone's intestines back into their body through their anus, just that once,
sounds horrible.
Because their sphincter muscle is blown, and yes, that does happen, then yes, you will never forget it. And I have told my kids, in fact, when they're like 11, I just get out my medical dictionary thing that they give us in school and show them every STD that's horrific. That's what I do. I don't care. I have no shame. I show them every jacked up disease that you can get and keep forever because I'm like, this can happen. This is real. I don't even have to make
your
it up.
Your parts could literally fall right. off. How about like, that? Right. Your parts there's could a fall
reason.
Off.
Yeah, there's a reason the why we don't do some of that. Yeah.
Well, here's another thing is if you're trying to raise a family, let's say you're a young couple, you're so host because the influences are so pervasive. Like if you look at pioneers that went out west, you lived on the prairie, and once a month you would go into town to get supplies. Otherwise, you were out in this house, right? So you didn't have all of these influences. So there was a period of time before my wife asked me to leave because I'm a conspiracy theorist. I was trying to find like Mennonite church because I looked at my kids starting to beg for a phone at that age. And, you know, you're opening up this portal, which you knew it was going to happen. And I thought, how can you avoid this? Because none of the Christian families that I saw were really doing very well. Everybody's kids were worldly. They were corrupt. They were insatiable. And the only people I saw that was maybe going for it were the Mennonites, where they, you know, or the Amish, where they just totally went up yours to the world, to the voices of the age, and they went off and made a counterculture. And you can say what you want, but I couldn't sell it to the wife, so it never happened. But I thought that was probably the best path to go if you really wanted to bring kids up in a holy way, because otherwise they don't have a chance.
It's really. The phone it's so pervasive, is the best isn't it? Tool.
Yeah.
It's a cesspool. It really is. Yeah. And all these kids, I mean, I have a friend and her daughter's like in ninth grade. I was telling Heidi and she came home from school one day and was like, Mom, can you describe for me like what's anal and like how do I go about? And she's in gosh. Ninth grade. Ninth right. grade.
Plot it again. Plot it again.
Mm-hmm. It's just so, I mean, like, I think back when I was in ninth grade, like, yeah, I was boy crazy and like all teenagers, like your hormones are like crazy, but I wasn't thinking about she's in ninth grade thinking about going to the max. Yep. And for what? This guy who's going to run back and be like, dude, she totally did it. Like laughing about it. Like and her reputation is now trash because she's the girl who did anal in ninth grade. Mm-hmm. And he's going to tell all his friends about it. And they're going to try to get with her because they know she'll do it. And this is the problem. And I mean, it's just once you have a phone, the world is your oyster. You can Google anything. You can watch anything. And then I was listening to a pastor on Instagram that I follow. And he said that he had a couple different guys. And this is why he took note of it. He had a couple different guys who were married with kids come to him and say, you know, I think I'm actually gay and I don't know how to like come to terms with this because I think I'm actually gay. And he asked them about like their life and blah, blah, blah. And they had all been watching like lesbian porn. And he was like, even though it's lesbian porn, you've still invited like a spirit of perversion kind of into your life. And they're now confused about their own sexuality, even though they are attracted to women. And it just kind of got me thinking. I'm not saying every guy who watches lesbian porn thinks they're gay. I'm just saying it got me to thinking that he took it in that way. Like, you've invited a spirit of sexual perversion into your life, and now you're having some weird thoughts. And it's as easy as that. It's the phone is like a scrying mirror that we all have in our pocket, and we carry it around with us every day, and like they watch you through it, and they know your habits, and it's really the phone is like the gateway to hell, really.
Julia, try not giving your kids the phone.
She had a thumbs up again, Julia. Did you know that?
Did I?
Update. There we go. Julia. There's a great example of this, of what happened during COVID, because people were locked into their houses during lockdown around the world. A lot of people had time on these devices. Mm. We saw the largest statistical uptick in men identifying as transgender. And far more often than not, they attribute it to, I was watching a lot of transsexual porn and I identified with the women, air quotes, within the videos and how empowering they were. So I think it's not just something that taps into a sexual desire that some people have. I see pornography as this ultimate weapon. I don't find it all too coincidental that the perfect ideal of a man or a woman that are shown in porn, the chiseled abs, the perfect women, they represent pagan gods like Aphrodite and Adonis.
Mm.
They are specimens. They are not the average person like Heidi was alluding to earlier. They're showing these pseudo-pagan gods and goddesses, which people end up having an infatuation with. And often, in cases like during COVID, the men want to be. The men want to be the hermaphroditic gods of the pagans by watching and subjecting themselves to this kind of propaganda.
Yeah. Well, because I want to
say too,
as well, and then it starts coming out in that way. So again, we're going to go back to strong father figure in that whole
childhood trauma. Yep, childhood trauma plays a very, very large role in your gender identity, and we see that all the time in like counseling roles and stuff like that, that the any kind of trauma that stems from a childhood like fractures your psyche, and you're so confused and that's where all the gender confusion comes in. But I want to say too, with the pornography, not only can you find every fetish that you could possibly think of, right? And every little niche thing to satisfy your appetite. But that is also being worked into curriculum at schools. And like Julia was talking about with the, you know, ninth grader that was talking about anal sex and whatever. That's part of their stuff. Plus, what was it? Teen People, Teen Magazine, the People edition. Was it during the COVID thing where they had a thing in there about anal sex for kids? School books, textbooks now talk about anal sex or pedophilia or whatever, because they're normalizing that behavior and working that in deeper and ingraining it in deeper into our society now.
And watch the moms go into the city council meetings and read the books that are in their libraries. And the city councils are shutting them down because it's too graphic. And they're like, hello, you're giving
it's
this
too
to my,
graphic
my
for a meeting,
grader,
but not our 6-year-old.
It's in elementary school. That's the sickening part. And
it's unbelievable.
Janet, you're hitting on something there that both Julie and I got into yesterday in an episode we recorded. It's almost as if the pornography kind of sexualization is leading into this slippery slope analogy of first it was gay couples, and then it became gay marriage, and then it became multiple genders, and it's transsexualism. It's moving into this transhumanism movement in which we're starting to see those ripple effects come out now. In Australia, we have a Green senator, an elected member of our government, who's pro-bestiality and necrophilia. And because of parliamentary privilege, can get up there at a parliament session question and answer time and put forward his case for why it's a good thing. On national television, can do it and get away with it. So it's this incrementalism that's building up to something far bigger and far nefarious in our scope of Christianity, what we know. We know the end times are going to be so as the times of Noah. We're seeing that in real time. We are on the precipice of that coming into our lifetimes.
And what do we know about the angels? What do we know about the angels? The angels mated with everything, anything that walked, animals, anything
with like a heartbeat.
Men, women, they didn't care. Yeah, that's what it means. That's what it's about. That's what it's about.
But, you know, we have educators and senators and the whole nine yards here in the United States that are very pro-pedophilia. That don't have a problem getting up there and saying it's normal. You should be attracted to children. You know, love is love. No, it's not. Especially if you read the Bible, if you follow the Bible, he talks about, you know, not having sex with animals, not having sex with your family members, not having sex with your neighbor's wife, you know, literally everything. And this is what is so rampant in society these days, like all the men that we put in dresses and all the women that are supposed to dress like men. That's also anti-biblical because God talks about that in the Bible, that a woman is not to wear a man's clothes and vice versa. But we're normalizing that and making all of these things a reality. And we as a society are supposed to accept that and go along with it like it's normal and it's okay. But when you do,
I agree.
That's a problem.
I think they almost want us all to have like ambiguous genitalia and like be in some kind of a fluid state.
And why? Because the angels were neither male nor female.
Right. Yeah, so I'm thinking like that's the end goal is like you have ambiguous genitalia, you're in kind of like a fluid-like state, and you could even be almost animalistic. You could be like I told Drew yesterday I need to use a litter box because I think I'm like a hermaphrodite cat, and you could just be that. You could just be, and then you know. People are like, oh, you know, there's no such thing as marriage anymore. Have you met some of the crazy messed up MFs that are out there thinking that they're crapping in a litter box and they think they're a cat and you wonder why the dating world and like marriage is gone? And it's like, who are you going to date?
They wear a butt plug tail and go and out in the world this way. Mm-hmm. And their moms pack their kitty litter in their backpack. It's bananas. I don't care what they say. It's crazy.
I would just like to say I'm really glad I never had a student in one of my classes that ever identified as a cat and needed a litter box. That would not have gone well.
No.
Danny, you wouldn't have cleaned their human-sized turds out of the litter box.
Oh, no. No.
Reminds me of an Italian comedian who's like, there's a kid at his kid's school that's identified as a lion because he goes by the name Rory. I was like, are you still there?
That guy.
I'm not even joking.
Original.
What's his name? Sebastian something. And he's so funny.
Yeah, that's the
Maniscalco.
Guy. That was hilarious.
Maniscalco. He's hilarious.
Hilarious. I love him.
To circle back to what you guys were saying earlier, is that even with the phone being a cesspool, well, it comes from CERN. Again, goes back to the Cernonis aspect of things, God of the Underworld, Osiris, equivalent of Nimrod, and cell phone, prison. Cernonis was the god of the underworld, or the dead. And I'm laughing because then you even get internet, place for a corpse or tomb, net, to restrain, to hold something. And I'm laughing because, you know, we talk about followers and stuff like that. But what does Christ say to Peter? You know, follow me. I'll make you fishers of men. You know, web is to entrap anybody. Fishers is to pull somebody out from all of that. It's a brilliant analogy, even though it was like 2000 years ago. And it's still very prevalent in our everyday society. And what you were talking about with the fluid gender, that goes back to Nimrod's son, Tammuz, with the Baphomet. And pansexual Hermaphrodite, Hermes, is basically saying, I'm the God, the father of all perfection is here. And I'm laughing because a lot of people, they're not seeing, if you look up the symbol for Mercury, which is affiliated with Hermes, it's the transgender symbol.
Shut up.
And I'm laughing because some people have said that Nimrod will be the Antichrist figure. So when you look up that symbol, and I'm over here going, no, I think it's the sun. Because when you dig into the sun, you're going, this is the parallel. This is where we get the triune aspect of stuff, is that they're lying to us. They're saying you can be regenerated and reborn in that sense. Whereas we're over here,
Brandon,
no, resurrection.
You are killing me with this.
You have not done a three-hour session with Brandon on this.
I go out into the pain.
Given you my theory yet on who I think that the Antichrist could be? And nobody get mad at me for saying this, but I said I think it would be a transgender person, and I think Michelle Obama would be a great candidate. And I always said that I think it would be somebody who is like gender fluid like that. Like, that's the ultimate sign of the inversion, perversion, you name it. It's like having like a transgender person who used to be male is now female and runs the country.
Shout out to Big Mike. Those shoulders.
Big Mike, right?
That isn't what's big on Mike. I saw the
chest. Oh, boy.
It is a boy.
But no, I mean, we could just be saying like crazy conspiracy theorist Julia, she's wacko, but I do think that it would be some type of like inversion like that. Like, it won't be it like everybody imagines, like the Omen, like Damien, and he's a little boy and he grows up and he becomes political and he takes over the world and he's the Antichrist. But I think it would actually be more like something pretty perverse, like they've chopped their bits and pieces off, or there's something about them that you'd be like, okay, well, they come to us as like this leader of the new what?
Have you seen the series American Gods?
No.
There's in this like scientific sci-fi show, gods end up being created by thought alone. And because the modern day man values technology, a god of technology erupts and comes into the world. It is sexually ambiguous. You can't tell what gender it is. It has smooth proportions all over, but has a huge rocking Adam's apple. And that, in my mind, is a perfect example of what the Antichrist would be.
So like a Ken doll.
Kind of, yeah.
It's over the world. I mean, that's wow. And I actually did a whole episode on Barbie dolls because there is some really dark history with Barbie dolls, and especially giving them to children too. Did you know the first Barbie doll, quote unquote, was like a prostitute, and you could flip her dress up and she had like little nipples and like little crotch hair and stuff, and then they made it kind of more ambiguous and they sold it to children.
It was a merchant.
And man, I'm telling you, there's some really dark stuff behind the Barbie doll too, and it's always targeted towards kids though, right? And pornography is too, whether we like to admit it or not, because it's so easily accessible on everybody's phone, and the TikTok this and TikTok that. Like, wear the skimpiest outfit you possibly can and then do a sexual type of dance and post it for the public, and all these weird pedos get on there and they look for 12-year-olds doing this TikTok dance in their bathing suit. And I mean, it's just so
easily
accessible.
They're usually sigils, by the way. Like the water challenge, that was like a witchcraft thing and all these things. But I will say this, is that not only that part that the kids do it and they look it up, but how about we see the insidious side of it in the cartoons? because the boobs in the cartoons or the little midriff Jasmine outfit or whatever is your first indoctrination to maybe I need to be more sexy because she kind of looks good and she has rock hard like abs and her boobs are perfect and all the things. And then you immediately start to like recognize all these things and they slide in images that are completely inappropriate. And Disney's been in trouble many a times. So,
John, yeah. Where are you at?
The precursor to the Barbie doll was not meant for children. Born in Germany, 1952, the inspiration for America's most famous doll was a saucy, high-end call girl named Lily.
Of course, her name was Lilith.
Unbelievable. Lilith, right?
You see, look, John fact-checked me live on air. I told you guys.
I was like, what? I never heard that one. That was pretty incredible. So
that was the thing. When the Barbie movie came out, I'm watching lines, and some of them are conservative. I've seen conservative girls that were in line, and I'm like, you guys are all wearing pink. I was like, am I at a abortion rally or is this the Barbie movie? And what do they do in the first scene? They crash a baby's head against a rock. And I'm like, guys, if you needed any more proof. And they're all clamoring like, yeah, this is the greatest movie. Oh, the nostalgia. And I'm just like, if you knew where it came from.
Right?
Oh, yeah. Julia.
I feel that way. Yeah.
That is a breakdown film for us. I sat there with my wife in the cinemas watching Barbie going, oh my God, the esoteric symbolism in this is unfounded.
Yep. I don't know, Drew. I can't make myself sit through it. There's some that I see and I'm just like, I can't do it because I'll puke in my mouth and I just can't. You know, I played with Barbies and Polly Pockets and like all those things as a little kid. But when you're like, as a conspiracy theorist, like, I did the Barbie episode and I look back on it and it just ruins a lot of stuff from your childhood. And, you know, the Barbie movie came out and I was like, I'm not worshiping Satan today. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. They didn't even try to hide it. The social programming was so obvious in that. And it was like all through it too. It was really laid on pretty thick. I didn't watch it either. I just saw like the reviews of it.
It's obvious for us. It's not obvious to people who still have mud in their eyes. And that's the thing. Yeah. They aren't seeing this stuff. Does anyone else have anything to... That's right. Does anyone else have any closing statements for our conversation today before we sign off?
Nope. This has been fun.
Come on, people.
I'm going to say
throwing absolute fire.
I'll throw one to John. John, I'll throw one to John. They no longer have mud in their eyes, but that was directly spit in their eye, not made by a paste anymore. Right, John?
Yeah, right. She's talking about a Mandela effect. And by the way, Brandon quoted from memory, Hosea 4:6, my people perish from lack of knowledge, but that is a Mandela effect. It's never been that.
Never been
it's
there.
Always been my people are destroyed for lack of knowledge, which is
destroyed.
They changed unfamiliar. It, Brandon. You're not wrong.
You can go to Amazon and there's three books for sale, I think, called My People Perish from Lack of Knowledge, right on the cover of the book, which never existed.
It's a Mandela. There's so many.
How could that be?
CERN.
Yes. Yeah.
Destroyed. Agreed. But that would tap into more like deteriorating because of that, as perish is already, it's a summation of things. So I like how you you're right. I can see
he has a whole bunch of them that you'd be blown away. Judge
no, that's
not
good
lest,
that's good
judge not lest ye be judged is not there. That is not there. It's not there.
This is a whole nother episode.
It is a
mind bender.
Next time.
That's my closing comment. Thanks for having me.
Janet,
it was great.
Are you
gonna
say something, Janet?
I was just going to say, for the people out there who are followers of Christ, stand your ground, stick to your gun, stick to your faith and your belief in God, and don't give in to the temptation to go along, to get along. Don't be swayed into thinking that you have to accept all of the things that they're pushing as society that are anti-biblical. So just lean on God for your faith and your belief.
And don't be ashamed to get help. That. Do not let shame back you into a corner because God is there for you. He doesn't care. He already seen it anyway. So don't worry about that. Just go to Jesus and ask for forgiveness because you know, these things travel in packs, like guilt and shame and anger. And if you have one, you'll let the rest in the door. So you just got to smack that out. Derek Prince has a lot of great stuff on this. So highly recommend.
Do not be deceived by your pride and ego. And this whole conversation today kind of brings me back to Corinthians 11, 1 through 34. Be imitators of me as I am of Christ. Now I commend you because you remember me in everything and maintain the traditions even as I deliver them to you. But I want you to understand that the head of every man is Christ, and the head of every wife is her husband, and the head of Christ is God. So keep that in mind. Don't, like people have said on this show today so eloquently, don't fall for your own pride, your own ego, your own misgivings as what it means to be human. Forget that this is a much bigger battle. It's spiritual in nature, and you need to make sure you're wearing the armor of God in all things we do.
Mm-hmm.
John, can I invite you to close the show out with a prayer, friend?
Of course. Father, thank you for this great gathering of friends and our new family members, as we all are brothers and sisters. And we just thank you that you were glorified tonight as we try to seek out truth in the midst of a falling society. And we just thank you for Drew to bring us together. And we give you all the praise in Jesus' name. Amen.
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 Thank you.
Amen.
Thank you, everybody. And we'll catch you all next time.
All right, guys. God bless.